podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the analysts at the World Cup. We're at a rather damp, in fact extremely damp, Bristol, looking out at the rain falling for Pakistan against Sri Lanka. Don't think we're going to get any play today. It's your hometown, Simon. Pouring with rain.
Well, it's allowed to rain here sometimes. Rain is good. Rain is life. Without the rain, the crops wouldn't grow. We wouldn't have any food.
What a damp squib after the exciting week we've had. 10 games and some interesting results. New Zealand and Australia top the World Cup table, and South Africa are almost bringing up the rear. Later, we'll look back at some of those games and look forward as well with Brendan McCullum, of course, who got his New Zealand team to the final 4 years ago. You can probably hear in the background the Pakistan fans who are never silent, even if there's no cricket. In fact, they're probably noisier if there's no cricket. They're sort of trying to do an anti-rain song, I suppose. But it's not working at the moment. But we have had a great week of cricket.
I think it's been a really fascinating first week to the World Cup. It's been helped by the fact, I think, that Bangladesh beat South Africa, by the fact that England lost to Pakistan, because it feels as if it's opened up the tournament. Still very early days. I mean, it may well be that teams really emerge, four teams emerge, and then go on and dominate the competition, and that we do get some meaningless games towards the end. I hope not. It'd be great if every match was live, but it's been full of interest, full of incident as well, controversy, England losing, India joining the party and winning, South Africa played three, lost three, Bangladesh doing well. I mean, it's been a really, really good week, I think.
And vibrant off the field as well, reflected by the sounds here in Bristol. Lots of horn blowing and cheering and stuff like that, and there's no cricket going on. In fact, there's just a massive puddle leaking off the covers. But just that it does reflect the cosmopolitan nature of Britain, doesn't it? The fact that I love to see the West Indian fan dressed in a sort of headdress and national dress, and obviously the Pakistanis and the Bangladeshis and the Tigers everywhere you go are going to be those soft toy shops have been doing a good business instead of seeing people coming as brides and vicars and men dressed as women. We're seeing people in sort of almost national dress costumes, which I think is really nice.
Well, that is part of a World Cup in the UK. It's also why, actually, if you think about it in a way, that although England are at home, that in a way Pakistan and India are at home as well, and Bangladesh are at home. So it's not like a World Cup when you go to India when there is that partisan support for just one side. Here, it's almost as if there are three or four home nations. And I think that obviously, I think Pakistan drew on that support in their match against England at Trent Bridge. India clearly drawn it as well. And Bangladesh, and to some extent, we've seen lots of Afghanistan supporters and Sri Lanka supporters as well. What it does do is it gives great atmosphere to the games. Yeah, a bit like Football World Cup, isn't it? Where you've got I'm not saying necessarily England-India games are going to be 50-50. There's probably been more India support. But, World Cup football matches, you have that support for both sides, and it creates a great atmosphere inside the ground.
Trends that have been spotted over the first week, I suppose one that I've noticed, and it's fairly obvious really, is the proliferation of wickets to short-pitch bowling. Mm. A lot of fast bowling from several sides, and obviously notably the West Indies, but England as well, and even Pakistan, actually, with some aggressive fast bowling at England. 41% of the wickets that have fallen this World Cup so far have fallen to fast short-pitch balls. It's quite interesting because it's a lot more than at this stage of the World Cup in Australia 4 years ago. And you'd think of Australia as having quick wickets. Mm. Actually, the English wickets and the way that the bowlers have bowled have been outdone Australia, and they've really tried to go short. There's been some good carry on these pitches. I mean, I was beginning to think yesterday, watching the Australia game against the West Indies at Trent Bridge, this is one of the quickest pitches in the world. It was flying through. The ball was taking off. I think an early ball from Stark to Gale went over the keeper's head and straight to the boundary. So it's added a bit of intrigue and actually a bit of encouragement to the bowlers.
Is this bowler striking back? Because they probably looked at this tournament and thought, well, what are we going to do to counter the big striking batsman? Well, one thing we can do is go short. And actually, they've also left, the groundsmen have left a bit of green in the pitches as well.
Well, yes, grass. I wouldn't, in a way, you say green. They're not damp. You know, they're not sort of traditional sense of damp pitches. But yes, certainly some grass to make
grass
the ball bounce.
Grass is green.
But somehow, when you say green, it sounds as
I mean, it does. It holds the surface together. Yeah, you get a good pace and carry with grass.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose the other thing, the reason why those tactics have been quite successful, I think, is because there is especially in one day cricket now, the batsmen are at the bowlers. They're down the pitch, even the quick bowlers, and when the ball is short, they're pulling off the front foot, knowing with the bats they've got the short boundaries as well around the world. Top edges tend to carry for six, so even if they don't get the full bat on it, it's going to get them runs. Well, actually, on one or two of these longer square boundaries in England, that doesn't work. And actually, bowling a really quick, high bouncer, and the batsmen sort of... There's less batsmen that are prepared to go back and play the pull shot. They're all playing the pull shot off the front foot, because that is the modern way of batting, is to go at the ball. So it becomes harder, it increases the pace of a short pitch ball if they're sort of at it, and therefore it potentially increases the effectiveness of a short pitch ball. And there's been some fast balls. I mean, I just looked down the list of bowlers, fastest bowlers on the tournament. Mark Wood's up there, obviously. Mitchell Starc, Jofra Archer, Rabada, you know, there's four or five guys that have really gone for it.
Andre Russell, O'Shane Thomas.
Yeah, O'Shane Thomas is in is about 11th in terms of average speed. Certainly Andre Russell, I mean, whether how long he's going to last bowling like that. I mean, his knees are completely shot to bits.
That's a real worry, isn't it, for the West Indies? It'd be such a shame for the tournament as well. Of course, the other aspect of the short pitch fast bowling is it really tests the umpires even more, because the square leg umpires, you know, okay, you're not exactly dozing off at square leg, but you're in a way required to do less, because the run outs now all go upstairs. But you know, you're right on it the whole time, looking for those wides, and perhaps that is an area that previously umpires have not been tested as much. But in this World Cup, they really have been tested by that judgment call about what's a wide, what's one for the over, what's, you know, just below shoulder height. It's not easy, especially when you get batsmen of, you know, different heights going to the batting end, you know, say in the same innings. So it's not been easy for the umpires.
And I mean, there was one no ball missed in yesterday's match.
Well, there were lots of decisions overturned as well.
Yes.
And they went against the West Indies.
I must admit, I think that, you know, I've always been a proponent of technology for helping umpires out. And I just feel, you look at an umpire, right, he's standing 2 yards behind the stumps at the bowler's end. How can he possibly tell with any accuracy whether the bowler's foot is close to the line, over the line, behind the line?
Some have been called as no balls that haven't been
no
balls as well.
Because of the distance they are away from the stumps, they just haven't got a good profile for whether it's a no ball or not. So let's have everything done by technology. It's easy for the third umpire to have a feed of the run out cameras, which are the ones that side on, which he can, with a little box, a little box called an EVS machine, which I use a lot of, or at least an operator I work with uses a lot of, you just wind back the little wheel and you can see exactly where the foot lands after 3 seconds.
So 3 seconds?
Yeah, well, less, 2 seconds.
Right.
I mean, literally as soon as the ball has landed, you can wind the tape back. It's a digital system, and you look at where he lands. So within, I would say, like, so let's do a little imitation. So the bowler's running into bowls like that, no ball, I could say to the umpire in the middle,
that
on
quickly.
The third umpire. Absolutely.
Right.
So,
and do the cameras get a clear view of the front for every single time?
Yes, because there's one each side.
Right.
For the run-outs, so you get a completely clear view, nothing.
And of course, after a batsman's dismissed, they're always checked anyway to see whether the batsman's out and he's recalled.
So that's one thing that, you know, the poor umpire has to try and deal with. And I think another.
Why has that not been done so far?
I don't know. And I mean, they're working on it. I think it will happen. And at the moment, the Hawkeye guys, who are monitoring all the angles, they monitor the LBWs, they monitor the run-out cameras. They are checking to see how many no balls are potentially missed per game, and it's probably between 5 and 10 per game.
Really?
That are just over. So anyway, that's one area that's very difficult for the umpires to manage. But the other thing is, as well, is edges. you know, umpires standing at the bowler's end, their ears are pointing away from the pitch. You know what it's like when you don't hear someone properly, you put your ear towards them, don't you? So actually,
especially as you get older.
Pardon? Especially, so the thing is, it really, for an umpire to be effective for his hearing, he needs to point his ear towards the batsman. Well, obviously, he's not going to be able to do that because then he can't see what's happening. So again, it's so difficult for umpires to use their own ears to be able to pick up stuff. And just in relation to that, forgivably yesterday, Chris Gaffney gave Chris Gayle out, caught behind, and we found out Gayle reviewed it instantly, which was brilliant by the batsman actually, and he was pretty right to review it because it clipped the stump.
Yeah.
And I just thought, out of interest, that where I'm working in the analyst position at this World Cup, I'm actually in the room where all these zing bales and zing stumps are being charged in a big battery pack. There's a whole sort of suitcase full of them. So I thought I'd bring two in here today. One is this is a Zing Bale stump, a blue stump with a stump camera in it. And this other one here is without the Zing Bales and without the stump camera, a wooden stump. But it's more traditional, though it's still got some technology in it. And what's your verdict on the weight of these two stumps?
Well, the one with that you use the Zing Bales on is
the blue stump.
Blue stump is much heavier. The one they're using for this World Cup is much heavier
than a sort of traditional wooden stump.
So the feeling would be then if you hit it, it's just more stable, so the bales don't come off.
Exactly.
So it's not about the weight of the bales. Is it about the weight of the stump?
It's about the rigidity of the stumps. I mean, they're like sort of three pillars in the ground. This stump is so rigid, there's no flex in it, whereas a wooden stump, there'd be some flex and wobble in it, you know. There's no flex in it. It's absolutely rigid. It's made of some kind of compound, plastic compound substance, but it's really heavy. And we had several instances, didn't we, in the IPL, where balls hit stumps quite hard and they flashed, but the bales didn't fall off. You've got a Zing Bale there as well.
I don't have a traditional bale in my hand. I would say this Zing Bale E just feels a bit weightier as well, actually.
Than the heavy bales you use when it's windy.
Yeah, than a traditional bale. So it's probably actually both, isn't it? The weight of the stump and the weight of the bales that's causing a problem. And a problem it is as well, because we've seen it happen up to half a dozen times now where the stumps have been struck and sometimes the bales light up, don't fall off. So as happened yesterday, stump didn't even move.
Yeah.
And so the bale didn't light up at all in the Chris Gayle incident.
I mean, I think you probably get, you know, traditional stumps will almost, if the ball glances them, there'll be a sort of bit of vibration, won't there, which causes the bales to fall off. And often bale grooves are not very good either in wooden stumps, whereas these are obviously made of plastic. They're much more rigid. I mean, you and I probably played in village, you know, club cricket where the bales barely sit on the stumps and the stumps are all crooked and, you know, only requires a sort of tiny breath of wind and the bale will fall off. Whereas these ones, you can hit them almost full on sometimes and the bales don't come off. So another disadvantage for the bowlers, the poor old beleaguered bowlers, but they're striking back with these bouncers, so at least they've got something to be crowing about after the first week of the World Cup.
Hi, this is Wasim Akram, and you are listening to the Analyst Podcast at the Cricket World Cup.
Now, England have got a big match on Saturday. It feels unthinkable, really, for their World Cup campaign that they could lose again. I mean, imagine, you know, sitting here in 36 hours' time, England lost to Bangladesh as they did in the last World Cup, and Bangladesh clearly are a decent enough side, and they could take England down. Can they take them down in Cardiff? If they did, I mean, that really would be huge for the tournament, I think, and disrupt hugely England's plans for this World Cup. What are your feelings about the game?
Well, I think that England have seen enough of Bangladesh now. Obviously, they've seen them in the past, but in these two games, to have good plans for them. I think they know what they're about. I think England are better at the death than either South Africa or New Zealand. And I don't think they'll be as sort of circumspect against the Bangladesh spinners as the other teams have been. You know, they've allowed people like Shakib Al Hassan to bowl, Mehdi Hussain a little bit as well. I think England will be much more proactive against the Bangladeshis. They're a good side, you know, Bangladesh. They're a good side. They're back quite deep. They've got some aggressive players down the order, but I I think England have got too much quality for them. Provided they bring out their A game, they should be fine.
Yeah, what about the toss and batting first as well? I mean, there would be a temptation tomorrow morning in Cardiff for England to put Bangladesh in, wouldn't there? There's been some rain around, you know, rain all
it's
day.
Rain forecast there tomorrow.
Well, the forecast is not too bad.
Right.
For enough cricket, I think. I think there's a possibility of some showers, but not too bad for enough cricket. So what do they do? It seems to me I've seen Bangladesh play a couple of times already. One warm-up game, and I watched the South Africa Bangladesh game. I didn't see the game against New Zealand, but it seems to me that probably batting first against them is the way to go. If you let them bat first, that they can get a score on the board and then build that pressure.
And there's no doubt that in a World Cup, chasing scores is much harder than it is in just a normal one-day series. There is that pressure of knowing that you can't play that team again. You know, it's a one-off game, even though it's not the end of the league stage. But you know, each game is very important. I think England will have learned also from what New Zealand did to the Bangladesh batting, which is they bowled fast and short. Now, South Africa tried that, but it was a bit half-hearted, and they really only had Rabada, who wasn't quite on it. But I thought the way that Lockie Ferguson bowled for New Zealand against the Bangladeshis slightly sort of unsettled them, and he bowled 4 overs for 7 after the power play and got a key wicket and just sort of undermined their batting a bit. Shakib is a hell of a player, though, and they've got to somehow find a way of keeping him quiet. He scores an incredible number of runs behind square on the offside. They need about 3 fielders there to stop that and try and pitch it up to them, because apart from the openers, I think the lower order, or the middle order, look a bit more vulnerable to pitched up deliveries. Mm. So the other thing about Cardiff, very long square boundaries, so you probably will see quite a lot of short bowling, and it won't be that easy to take it on if it's well directed.
Yeah, talk about Tamim, one of the Bangladesh openers, because you've written him off as well. He's passed it. You said in our previous podcast. That's a guaranteed.
Well, he didn't score.
That's
that
a guaranteed 100.
He didn't look that good against New Zealand. Yeah. I mean, he was okay, but I just don't think he's going to dominate bowling attacks like he has in the past. He might scratch around and get the odd 50, but I can't see him being a real force. England just have to play better than they did against Pakistan, basically, don't they? I mean, Pakistan, they batted second. I just wonder if the trend is going to be to bat first. I think, you know, scoreboard pressure and all that. And in that regard,
do you think it'll change, do you think?
I think it might. I mean, obviously, if you've got sort of dodgy weather around, then there is an inclination to bowl first because, you know, there's going to be some movement around if the pitch has been under covers. But I think if we get better weather again, then I think batting first is going to be the way to go. And in that regard, talking to Brendan McCullum the other day, after that New Zealand win against Bangladesh, you know, we talked about all the kind of different strategies that are going on, and we talked particularly about the difference in pressure when you're chasing runs or in playing in one of these World Cup games compared to playing those teams in bilateral series.
Now, the bilateral series, we saw massive scores all around the world. The teams just go out there, play with sort of reckless abandon, knowing that there's always the next game that you could make it up. Whereas in this, there is no tomorrow for some of these games, and every game is so important. And when we look at South Africa now, they've played 3 and they've lost 3. And you know, for them, it's so difficult. And a game like this, for both these teams, it means so much to them if they were able to get across the line in this game.
It seems to me, actually, also, that captains are quite keen at the moment to put sides in, thinking that there's going to be some movement in the pitch early on and that they can chase the score down later because the pitch will flatten out. But actually, with the way that English pitches are now, which is dry at the start and actually getting drier as the match wears on, maybe batting first is the way to go.
Yeah, I think so over here, especially because, to me, England's been so successful by playing 2 spinners. I think Rashid's been incredibly successful in these conditions, and to me that would be what I'd be looking to try and implement is get the runs on the board, bring your spinners into play later on and allow them to attack. And I think what we've seen even tonight in this game, Bangladesh spinners have bowled 28 overs between them. They've taken 6 for 127. It's just remarkable stats in this game. And you know, to me, I think that's going to be a trend that continues. And
so maybe a call-up for Ish Sodhi for New Zealand, then?
He would have been in my starting team, to be honest. I think Sodhi's one of those sorts of bowlers who he can travel occasionally. being the leg spinner and obviously trying many variations. But you can mitigate that risk as well by allowing someone like a Colin de Granholm to be able to operate from the other end and tie up a few overs. I'm not a massive fan of stocking your team with all-rounders, because to me I think all-rounders are better when there's only one of them in the side and they've been pushed from the outside. I think specialists, and especially in pressure games, pressure moments, that's their meat and drink. That's how they pay the bills. They go out there and they do their core skill.
In a World Cup, how much effect does the crowd have? Because you get these grounds, whether you're in Melbourne, whether you're in England, obviously when you're in the subcontinent, when teams like Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, obviously India, Pakistan, get incredibly fervent support. Does that play a part when you're out there?
Definitely, and that's the thing about playing here in England. There's such support for the Asian countries in particular. Tonight's a classic example. The Bangladesh fans are up and about the minute they were back into the game. And I've toured Bangladesh on a number of occasions, and when they get in front, the fans are just incredibly supportive and loud, and it's like another member of their side. And we were whitewashed twice on the back of that, just because we were never able to reverse the trend that they were able to start dominating us, and their crowd definitely made a huge impact on that.
How can two players with the amount of experience and skill of Kane Williamson and Ross Taylor have so many cock-ups in between the wickets?
Oh, it's something that when I was sitting in the dressing room with my fellow teammates, we could never quite work out that two out-and-out genius players could be such poor runners between the wickets together. And I really don't know. None of us could identify why that was. But you know, what we'd always pass on to them is, for the sake of one run, it's not worth it. So no is never a bad answer when those two are batting at the crease. They're such valuable members of the side.
It doesn't look like there's an awful lot of trust, actually, in between them on calls. I mean, it's like, yeah. I want to check and see if that's an OK run.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I guess some guys run better with other guys, but for those two, they certainly don't run well together. I think John Wright once alluded to the fact when Kane Williamson started playing international cricket, they looked like he had heavy pads. And 10 years on, I don't think his pads look any lighter these days. Sometimes when he's running between the wickets, especially with Ross Taylor. But no, those are the quirks, I guess, of this game that we play. There's some combinations work better, and some, whilst they churn out the runs, there is just that little bit of area where they're not so confident that's running between the wickets.
Owen Morgan's credited New Zealand with sort of almost rejuvenating England's approach when you were first here, 2015. How much influence have you had on Owen Morgan yourself? I mean, you're big mates, aren't you?
Yeah, we're great mates. Obviously, you know, that back in 2015 when Morgs took over the England side, he inherited a team, really. And I think the way that we played in New Zealand really resonated with him, that's how he wanted England to play. And I guess that sort of attacking, freewheeling type of cricket needs buy-in from your entire squad, and what that needs is leadership to be able to give guys comfort, loyalty at the selection table, and just out-and-out support of the brand of cricket you're trying to play. And I think that's what Morg's been able to do, and he's been given a really good rein, I think, initially from Andrew Strauss when he was in charge, and allowed him, he backed Owen Morgan to get the job done. And I think, you know, along the way he's been able to have a lot of success. And to me, the way they play the cricket, it puts bums on seats, it's entertaining. If we had anything to do with it, then that's fantastic, because, you know, that's certainly how I like to see the game played.
Well, as you talked about when you came over that summer, you talked about trying to transfer the idea that when you opened the curtains in the morning and the sun was up, you were about to play cricket, and to almost bring the idea of fun back into the game. And it seemed to be contagious.
Well, I think a lot of the time in this game as well, we look at all the peripheral pressures and angst that come with playing this game, and we forget about the very core element for why we started playing in the first place, that it was fun. And when we were kids, it didn't matter how many times you missed out, you kept wanting to go out there and put the pads on and have another turn at bat. And sometimes when the pressure's on in this game, the reverse, emotions come into play. So it's a matter of trying to just free yourself up, go out there, try and be a part of something special. You get one crack at it as a player in this game, and you want to look back, and it's not your stats that you worry about, it's not your runs or your wickets or anything like that. It's the time that you had playing in an environment with a group of men that you tried to, that you look back on and say that was really special. And in 15, 20 years' time, you're sitting back on the couch. If you can do that and know that those that period of your life was enjoyable and you achieved some pretty cool things along the way with a group of people, then it's all worthwhile. And I think, you know, that's the way I see the England cricket team playing at the moment under the captaincy of Owen Morgan.
You and Morgan, do you talk more about cricket or horse racing when you're together?
Horse racing, golf, Guinness, a little bit of cricket every now and then, but not... We don't talk a lot because we sing from the same sheet, really. You know, we play the game exactly the same way, I think our leadership skills are similar in terms of what we're trying to achieve by freeing guys up and giving them confidence to go out there and play a free style of cricket. But you know, our friendship extends well beyond the cricket boundaries, and to me, that's something I'm really proud of. Is that, you know, at the end of your cricket career, it's not, people don't remember you for the player you are, but for the person that you are and the relationships that you got in place. And I know that anytime I go to Ireland or London, I know that I've got a bed at Morgs's place and vice versa. And
you must have a bit. Times. Presumably, there's a bit of Irish in there, is there? Somewhere?
Somewhere
with that,
in there.
With that, have you ever looked back to your history? And is it Scottish or Irish?
I think there's a bit of Scottish in there, but I think I've got more of an Irish liver.
He's a jolly chap, isn't he, Brendan McCullum? I mean, he just sort of breathes joie de vivre, I think. And it's a shame he's not playing.
Really. Yeah.
One of the things he said to me, actually, is I said, do you find when you ran down the wicket to bowlers, did you deliberately do it to try and make them bowl short? Because you watch Josh Butler walk up the pitch, sort of shimmy up the pitch to a fast bowler, almost invariably they drop it short, and then he works it away for runs on the leg side. So I said, you know, was that your strategy? And Brendan said, I don't know. He said, I didn't deliberately go down the wicket. I just suddenly found myself doing it. He said, quite often, it was a completely instinctive thing. I didn't plan to do it. And suddenly, as the bowler was halfway through his run, I found myself halfway down the wicket.
Here's a question, then. Just talking about, you know, the way that the McCullum influence, the way England have changed their game. Do they have to now adapt in this World Cup? Because you know, they played all these bilateral series and they went for it, smashing it. Do you think actually they need to just be a bit cannier? They're actually going to have to change again in this World Cup, adapt, not just go after it, because the pitches are perhaps not going to be belters. They're going to have to play a canny game.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, the trouble is there's no secrets now, are there? Everybody knows how everybody plays, and you sort of almost know exactly where to set. I'll tell you what I think the Australians did very well against the West Indies was a couple of little field settings. And Shane Warne said at the Spirit of Cricket lecture panel after Mike Brilley gave his Spirit of Cricket lecture last week, he said, I think field settings and brave captaincy is going to be a key thing in this World Cup. And what Aaron Finch did was he kept mid on in with Carlos Brathwaite, and then Stark went with the slower ball, mid on being an area where Carlos Brathwaite can hit the ball really well.
Yeah.
But he was done by the slower ball, and Finch took the catch at mid-on. And then, almost even better, he then bounced Jason Holder, who was playing really well, with fine leg up. So Holder would have been expecting Stark to go full with men back on the boundary straight, but he kept fine leg up, and he bounced him, and he gloved it, and he was caught short fine leg. So I think that, you know, teams like England, who have bowlers who are quite adaptable and clever, that maybe field settings, and Morgan's a very smart guy, I think maybe we'll see some clever field settings which are perhaps unexpected, trying to tempt batsmen. Maybe keep slips in a bit longer, or put slips in when a new batsman comes in, even though it's in the middle overs when the ball isn't doing a lot.
Yeah, I was just thinking about England's approach, which is one of sort of, you know, go for it, isn't it? I think England are so reliant on their success on what happens at one and two. So if you can get both openers out inside the power play, then that takes you a long way to just, you know, pulling England back and causing them some problems. So I suppose that's the challenge. Roy and Bairstow at the top of the order. England need them to both break free if they possibly can, but certainly one of them, and that's not happened.
No, and I suppose they're also that one little frail area is the Moeen Ali position at seven, because he's not in any form. And so if they do lose early wickets, you can't rely on Moeen to get them out of trouble. Obviously, you've got Butler, you've got Stokes, you've got Root, etc., Morgan. But Moeen at number seven, that number seven position, you know, and you've got India, you've got Hardik Pandya. We've just seen Nathan Coulthard belt 92 for Australia.
Number
to get
eight.
Them out of that situation. Yeah. So, you know, those positions, and with the bowlers, the quick bowlers bowling well, 6, 7 and 8, and luckily England have got Butler at 6, who is the most feared batsman in the world, I'd say, along probably with Andre Russell. So they have got that. Well, sorry, I meant lower
order. In the middle order,
It's not lower order batsman more. And even Kohli, I mean, Butler scores quicker than Kohli. Yeah. And he's just, so I'm not saying Butler's better, but there's a fear about Butler that he can destroy you, whereas Kohli kind of dissects you, I'd say. Butler is intimidating.
Yeah.
But, you know, England, he got 100 the other day and England didn't win. So it's got to be a team effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been fascinating so far, and long may it continue. England have got a big game against Bangladesh. They have lost them before, actually, in England in one-day cricket. They lost on this ground, on this Bristol ground. I remember it well in a low-scoring game. But they can't have too many more slip-ups, and you feel they can't really afford a slip-up against Bangladesh in particular. That is one of the sides that they would expect to beat in their intended progress through to a semi-final.
So we've got that game coming up, and straight after that, Sunday, I'm at Australia-India at the Oval. So after those two big games, we'll report back to you on Sunday night.
Hope you enjoyed it. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.